Which show is the Freak Show Wrestling?
Freak Show Wrestling is the one Sin Bodhi does.
My name is Sin Bodhi, Warlord of Weird. Some of the most talented freaks in the whole wide world are right here in Las Vegas in Sin City. And they're my best friends. And they work for me at my company, Freak Show Wrestling.
I know. He's a little weird.
He's a scary clown.
He's a scary clown, but it's going to be okay.
Because here at Motherfucking Hood Slam, all we care about is that you came out to have a good fucking time.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Please give a warm welcome for John Allen.
Yeah, dude. Beavis and Butthead. I want 1993 back, y'all. This show was on the air. Shaq Attack was in full force and no rent. Yeah.
What is up, everybody? This is your good friend, Greg DeMarco here. I know, not the voice you're used to hearing when we look at a special edition of Chair Shot Radio, but I am helping out the guys, and we have a super special show for you today. As you know, Chair Shot Radio is partnered with Freak Slam to bring you a series of interviews leading up to the very special event on June 23rd as Freak Show Wrestling and Hood Slam come together to present Freak Slam. Super excited about this event. It will, of course, be at the Fremont Country Club, the home of Freak Show Wrestling, 601 Fremont Street in Las Vegas, Nevada. You can go to freakshotwrestling.com or birdswillfall.com, which is, of course, the site for Hood Slam. Get your tickets, $20. Have a great time, especially if you've never been before. And we're going to talk about that a little bit because I am privileged to welcome aboard for this special Freak Slam broadcast our new friend, and you can find him on the Twitter at King John Allen, voiceover talent, stand-up comic, wrestler, so many other things that we get to talk about here today. It is John Allen. John, thank you so much for taking some time out for Chair Shot Radio and for Freak Slam.
Hello, no problem. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're super excited about this and put these together with our relationship with Sin Bodhi and everything that we're doing. And you've got just a multitude of things to talk about and kind of a entertainment version of a Renaissance man, so to speak. So we're going to get into some of that now. And I know for me, you actor, comedian, voice actor, wrestler, commentator, everything that comes along with the world of professional wrestling. Let's just jump in. Like, what came first? It's kind of the chicken or the egg conversation. Like, what got you started down this road to entertainment in general?
I just kind of always realized I had a knack growing up for doing impressions and imitating people. So that was sort of the unspoken class clown sort of thing going on. Like, I didn't do a lot of theater in high school, but I was, you know, constantly getting in trouble for doing bits and doing voices and stuff like that. And around, I guess it was junior year of high school, I just started thinking, like, you know, hey, there's actually people that get paid to do voices and stuff like that. So let's look at that. So that was originally what kind of was the catalyst. And then along the way, you know, I'd try theater, I'd try film, I'd try stand-up, and, you know, wrestling came along. It was something I always enjoyed growing up and wanted to contribute to on some level. And then over a number of years, I got to be a pretty good utility man, got to do a little bit of just about every side of the business you could imagine, you know, even promoting at one point. So that's kind of how that went.
So once you kind of got out of high school, what did you venture into first?
I would say voiceover. That was actually, I guess technically I'd finished up my diploma a little early through a whole series of events, and that's when I got to it was around that time that I flew out to Texas and got to do a bit part on Dragon Ball Z. But that would chronologically be the first thing, I suppose.
Okay, so what was the part on Dragon Ball Z? Because I'm sure people are going to hear Dragon Ball Z, immediately recognize it, and look for it.
It was pretty minor. It was a one-liner thing. I hesitate to even say it too much these days because it's like I've certainly done things that gave me more screen time. He was called Pink Hat Guy. He shows up, episode 206, I believe, King of the Demons. And there's a bit where all the Z fighters have gone off to fight Majin Buu, and everybody's still at the tournament waiting for a match to happen. And as the announcer's trying to calm everybody down, going like, "We'll just have a brief intermission." I'm this guy in a pink hat in the stands, going, "Come on, move it!" But I gotta mention it because it was like my first thing. I love Dragon Ball Z, and it's cool. But it's like sometimes it's like, well, shoot, if that's all that role was, then what did he do on JoJo? You know, when the reality is I did a, you know, much more memorable spot on that.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that is pretty hilarious. Is it one of those things where you still get, like, you know, a 3-cent royalty check in the mail and
God,
don't even
no.
know what to do with it?
God, no. Anime is kind of a different ball game. I don't want to out what the rates are or anything like that.
Of course.
But traditionally, we don't get residuals on those.
Okay. No problem. No problem at all.
I would say the residual, if anything, is sometimes I still get asked about it, case in point right now. So
right.
It's still a conversation piece, and sometimes you can parlay stuff like that into, like, convention appearances and such. But that's the back end of that business, really.
That's pretty cool. You could literally, like, they'll list you on a convention program, put Dragon Ball Z under your name, and people will just, you know,
they've
assume. Yeah, oh, I'm sure.
You know,
I would
do
it.
They've done it. And, you know, I've even though, like, on the actual show, my contribution to the series was pretty minor, to say the least.
Right.
You know, I've still got definitely some good stories from those times of hanging out with Chris Sabat, who's Vegeta and Piccolo, and Kyle Abear, who's adult Gohan, is still a very good friend to this day, and so forth. So, you know, it was definitely interesting being on sort of the ground floor when that company was starting to hit its stride in the anime world, back before they, you know, sort of became the powerhouse that they are today.
Right. Gotcha. So does that even appear, like, on any kind of demo reel or anything that you put out there?
Are you talking about the pink hat guy bit?
Yeah.
I suppose I could put it on there. I never really thought to do it. You know, that sort of gravelly tone I certainly got, I think, on the more recent cut of my demo. I've got stuff that sounds similar to it, but no, I haven't.
Okay.
I never actually thought to put that particular bit on there. Maybe I'll do that in the next one as a gag. We'll see.
Yeah, it would be kind of funny as a gag, and maybe people who might have actually come to know your work, you know, without knowing your work from Dragon Ball Z might even be a little surprised about it. Who knows? So
maybe. You'd be surprised how that can work. Stephanie Nadolny, who was Kid Gohan and Kid Goku, she was, if you're familiar with a cartoon that's on Cartoon Network now called OKKO, she wasn't really marketing herself so much after the Dragon Ball Z days. Ian Jones-Cordy,
really?
I believe is the creator, he sought her out because he had her voice in mind for KO. And if you look at how the character's, like, drawn and written, it's very much like, you know, Kid Goku all over again. So that shows you how, like, yeah, some of the folks that were fans back in the day, you know, they've grown up and some have joined the industry in a professional capacity, and it's interesting how those connections work sometimes. And that's honestly what I love about the passion and the fandom of folks who watch the shows, is because of you know, just how it connects you to so many different people.
It does, and the people connection is something. I have two kids, and even now I try to explain to my son, because he plays a soccer player, and his coach also coaches at the college level, and I'm telling him, I'm like, you're really good, you want to be with this coach, because he knows other people, and it's almost like I'm trying to explain to a 12-year-old about networking and how important it is.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's so funny because when I was growing up, I always thought, you know, I would be different and everything would be based on merit and accomplishment. And then you realize, okay, yeah, it really does help.
I think a lot of people, we were all, as growing up, we were all sort of led to believe that there was, the sort of one path to success and all that. And it's just a different ball game where now it's like, you know, the degrees we were all told to have aren't really the golden ticket that maybe that we thought they would be. But they certainly come with a hefty price tag nowadays, don't they?
They do. They actually, in my real life, I work in that area, so I definitely understand what you're talking about there. But yeah, it really, you know, our world is a world of convenience, and so when you know somebody who can fill a role, it's a lot easier than going through hundreds of resumes and samples and anything else that you want to, even if you can find somebody that way. So what eventually brought you to the stage? Because me having done some stand-up myself, like what brought you to the stand-up comedy stage, which is so unique and unlike anything else?
I think it was just the next evolution of me wanting to make people laugh. It's certainly a skill unto its own. Like I knew how to be a performer from being in acting and knowing how to do some funny impressions, but it's definitely the writing is the huge learning curve. And, that certainly took some time to get to a level where I was, I will say to my credit, I didn't have like the years of bombing, like you'd see with like, you know, the backstory for the Joker and Killing Joke or anything like that. To get to a level where I was, you know, a little bit more comfortable, like inviting people to the shows and stuff. I love that. Like, I always like when you can, find the concrete and the factual in something that's a bit more abstract. So like, you know, Greg Dean is a fantastic resource for learning joke structure. There's some other means of kind of figuring out the nuts and bolts to it as well. And I wish more people sought those out.
It's funny because when I wanted to go into stand-up comedy, I didn't know what to do. And being somebody who was always heavily involved in education, I was like, okay, there's got to be some place where I can learn. And I ended up doing this like 3-week seminar where I was living in Connecticut. I would take a train into New York City and kind of did this crash course. And the bulk of what I did, and I went to like 9 different sessions, the bulk of what it was writing. It wasn't anything, you know.
Yeah.
Everything else was,
purely
paramount. Writing. Yeah, and because I think you can teach writing. You can teach writing and structure. It's funny because it's so much is in delivery and timing, but I don't know that you can really teach a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely hone it. And I think that's the way most people would answer it. Like, can you teach funny? And it's like, well, you can teach them structure. You can teach them how the mathematics of how a setup and a punchline work and how, you know, why you do tags, a couple of laughs out of the same premise and all that. But I mean, yeah, the nuances and stuff, you really do have to have that spark. It's not something that, something is, if they can be taught, they're certainly harder to teach, if that makes sense.
Right.
So it's definitely those that kind of that bring the natural skill to the table, but also have the desire to continue to write and write and write and constantly update their acts. I mean, that's I think for like an art form where like, you know, you're up there for your job for the day is just being on stage for 60 minutes. I know that's overgeneralizing it and simplifying it, but it's like sometimes with that, you know, you forget about just how much bulk material you have to write because, you know, if you write 10 things and you get one solid bit out of it sometimes. So that's right. The struggle for me, certainly sometimes, because I can fall into the laziness trap just as much as anybody else sometimes.
Oh yeah, and I remember when I was writing material, it usually hit me maybe about 20 minutes after I lay down to go to sleep, and mm-hmm. I'm all of a sudden I have to get up and go type, and then I might be sitting at the computer for 2 hours just typing nonstop, typing and deleting and getting rid of stuff. It's just because that's when it comes, and you make the mistake once where you go to sleep.
Definitely.
You make that mistake once where you go to sleep and you're like, I'll remember it in the morning, and then you wake up in the morning.
Oh, yeah,
and you're like,
exactly.
Damn it.
Yeah. If you don't jot it down, if you don't keep a pen and paper nearby or something, well, now you can just grab your phone and type it into the notepad. But, yeah, same idea.
Yep. No, that is 100% true. So what is kind of the I guess the – maybe we'll entertain the listeners. What's the most unexpected door that's been opened for you throughout your career in entertainment? Like the, something that you were like, man, this is something I never thought I would do.
Man, there's a bunch. I'll tell you, I mean, not to circle it back into the plug prematurely for Freak Slam, but I'll tell you, having well, with some of the names that Sin has had on the shows over the year, like if you told me that I was going to be dressed as Trump and hanging out with Marty Jannetty at the after party and stuff like that, I would have been like, dressed as who? Wait, Marty Jannetty, you know, like stuff like that. I mean, I don't know about like, you know, gigs that people wouldn't necessarily know was me or something like that. But I mean, certainly just, I'm very blessed with some of the names that I've gotten to work with over the years in various forms of entertainment, like opening for Jim Florentine from That Metal Show and Crank Yankers, or, working with Dana Carvey when he was, setting up his show, First Impression with Dana Carvey, stuff like that. It definitely takes, you know, it's usually stuff that I seek out, so I can't always say that it was like a huge surprise, but I'm certainly very blessed when it happens and grateful for it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the world of entertainment, people don't understand, is so, you know, it comes and it goes, and you have to take advantage of the opportunities when they're there. Case in point, the recent example with Roseanne's show being canceled, like hundreds of people, you know, depending on what ends up with it, but put out of a job because of a tweet. And that's kind of how the entertainment business works. I mean, I was friends with a guy who was literally, he was a camera guy. That was what he did. He was a camera guy or a mic operator, and it still was, you know, gigs came and they went, and it's just the life that you have to lead and be prepared for it. I don't know how you do that from a financial perspective, because it's hard to plan. But I can imagine, you know, that's one of the more difficult parts of that life.
Yeah, that is absolutely the fight, 100%. Especially as much as it costs to live in California, you know, it's you know, being a responsible adult and doing what you need to pay your bills, but also trying to find the balance to where you also have the flexibility to go out on auditions and accept the gigs when you book, by the grace of God. So that's the hard part. And it's, you know, you take the work where it is, and you do what you got to do.
Right.
That's sort of the best I can answer that one with.
No, it makes sense. What is kind of the job that you had to quit for a gig that you're like, man, I kind of wish I didn't quit that job?
Oh, Lord. That's a tough one. I'll say there was a point where things had slowed down for me on the entertainment side of things, and I'd gotten offered a sales position where they told me it was going to be, you know, certainly with my background in like relating to people and public speaking and all that, and some prior sales experience, they were telling me, hey, everybody who takes this gig makes low six figures. And that's like the worst person we got doing this is making low six figures. Now at the, you know, certainly that would have been like the most money I'd made in my life at the point. But
right.
You know, when they told me about the hours, it was like, you know, six days a week, 11 hour days. I'm like, all right, there is no way I can pursue entertainment at this point if I take that. Now, the smart thing probably would have been to you say, yeah, no, I'm in it to win it, and I'll do that for 6 months, save up, like, you know, if an extra 50 grand or something like that, and then get back. But it was one of the things where I was like, you know, I got to make a choice here. Am I going to stick it out through the dry spell in entertainment or take the easy, mundane way of life here? And I went with entertainment, and there were enough things that popped up that was like, you know, hope spots, as you might call it in wrestling, that I was like, all right, I'm still in this. Let's not throw in the towel just yet. And should the day come when we have to, that'll, you know, there's always going to be jobs like that out there. So.
Right. Before we get into the wrestling side of things, because obviously we're going to touch on that. What is, you know, what's the gig that you
on
put Share on
Shot pedestal? Radio, we're going to talk about wrestling.
It's shocking. I know. It's funny too, because we encourage our shows and our hosts and even my own show, Outside Interference on Tuesday nights. We once did a show where we called it Show Perea. We didn't talk about wrestling at all. And the feedback was insanely positive. People were like, it was really fun to listen to you guys not talk about wrestling. So believe it or not, wrestling fans like other things. Who would
have
known?
Did you have a special guest on that episode or anything?
That was just me and my co-host. We didn't have – our show was a little bit shorter. So
I was hoping you were going to tell me something like, yeah, we had Tugboat on the show, and all he talked about was auto sales. It was fantastic.
Auto sales and Darth Vader helmets. That's all he talked about.
Yeah.
Or Stormtrooper helmets. Yeah. That's it.
And how to watch your step, mainly. That also came up in conversation.
No, but that the Shockmaster conversation did come up when Roman Reigns speared Jinder Mahal through a wall that shouldn't have been where it was on a recent edition of Monday Night Raw. So that one was brought back up.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, especially because once they went through the wall, you saw arrows pointing in the direction of the wall, showing that obviously that hallway is there for a reason, not a fake wall. But how many people watching really noticed that? Probably more than they think, to be honest with you, if I noticed it. So,
yeah.
But we digress. But no, we will get into there. But what is the big gig that you like, that kind of the holy grail for you? Like, if you got this, you'd be like, this is why I got into this.
Oh, Lord. That's tricky, especially with the mindset of, like, you know, scavenging for jobs. You get in that mindset of, like,
yeah,
you know, every single gig is another step. So don't necessarily begrudge any unless they you know for a fact you'd regret being a part of telling a certain kind of story later or something like that. But
true.
I don't know, man. I get that from time to time. Like, what is, like, the one thing you'd like to get? I would like to just continue doing what I'm doing, just maybe with a couple extra zeros at the end of the check, you know? Keep doing film, keep doing animated characters, continue to poke little fun at Trump through the magic of pro wrestling, I suppose, you know?
Right.
Stuff like that.
So let's dive into that a little bit. You do all the stuff with entertainment and impressions, and you're doing voiceover work and some TV and some movies. How does that take you into professional wrestling?
I was just watching the pay-per-views at a pizza place in San Diego, almost 10 years ago now. And, you know, I'm cracking some jokes at the show. We're watching one of the WWE pay-per-views, and I noticed some guys, they're handing out flyers afterwards to – and I realize it's to an indie show. We get to talking. We strike up a friendship. They find out I'm a comedian. They ask me to come by and do some commentary. So that's sort of where it started, was me doing commentary on some indie shows in San Diego. And then one of the guys would ask, like, hey, would you like to maybe try being my manager? And I was like, absolutely. You know, I definitely think that's something I could do, is, you know, talk crap and then take my comeuppance at the end of the night.
Right.
And then it would, you know, just other things would happen. Then they would pitch the idea of, like, well, what if the funny comedian announcer guy was part of a match? So I went and, you know, got some basic training to do that. And then somebody would come up to me with an idea of, like, running, you know, our own shows in San Diego. And it just kind of kept going from that. I try to keep an open mind, and I try to take opportunities as they're presented to see what I can learn from that and see what might add more value to my life and other people's lives potentially. And it just kind of goes from there. I mean, currently I'm in a band with a sort of a, where we wear like dead dinosaur skulls, you know. I just keep keep on trying these things out. I'm like, all right, you know, we've tried everything else to be famous and a household name. Let's see where this goes.
So what role, she talked about this band, which I didn't even know anything about.
Yeah.
So what are you, what instrument do you play, or are you singing? Where is that
coming from? I'm the front man. Yeah. The instrument is my voice. And,
right.
It's called Bonehenge. We've got our first show at CIA in North Hollywood, the California Institute of Abnormal Arts, on June 15th. It's actually the same venue where I wrestle for Brian Kendrick's wrestling, pro wrestling, as Ricotta Flair. So it's, you know, it's kind of a nice home, you know, it's almost like being in my own backyard, because it's a venue I'm very familiar with already. So it'll be hopefully an easy transition to singing in that place as well as wrestling.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah, I know.
But
it's cool. Definitely sounds crazy. Yeah. So obviously, go, you know, at King John Allen, go follow it on Twitter so you can see this stuff and see what's coming up, especially with a gig like that, which kind of came out of nowhere for me. So I love hearing about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got Colleen from Radioactive Chickenheads, if you're familiar with other, like, the comedy or gimmick band scene. You know, Ian from Kirby's Dream Band. It was it was mostly their sort of brainchild. I don't know if that's the right label, but, you know, they just kind of came to me with the idea. And said, all right, let's give it a shot.
You know, it's you reminded me of something I wanted to ask earlier. Before I ever got into stand up, I did improv. I went to an improv show, ended up getting pulled up on stage, and was like, you know, I think I could do this. And then it just, you know, there were advertisements, get sucked in, that whole thing. And the biggest thing I learned from improv.
And I did.
Exactly. Yes, and. And that's the life you lead. Like, everything that's put
it
in front of you.
That. I never thought of that. But yeah, it's very much like, hey, could you sing in this band? Yes, and I'll give advice on the logo. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually, probably 3 years ago, in the current job that I have now, or the current company I work for, because jobs are always ever changing, I literally put together and delivered a yes and training to, you know, in the corporate world about how to say yes and make things happen for our employees. And it's, you know, and it was all based on improv, like literally was doing improv activities with people. And it's so funny to watch people who probably don't even want to be there have to stand in a line of 7 or 8 people and do a yes and activity. But I'll tell you,
it's such a good skill to have, even if you're not necessarily going into being an actor or a comedian, just because it teaches you to sort of roll with the punches and, you know, think on your feet, certainly in a way that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily feel, you know, wouldn't normally have the opportunity to think about doing even.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at 41 years old, I still use things I learned in improv every single day. It's something that has had – maybe that was a better education than my college degrees. I don't know, but it feels like it sometimes.
Willing to bet that justification gets used a lot.
Yeah,
where we have to sort
crazy.
Of explain, hey, where were you last night? Well,
I actually one time I was working years ago at Target, and they wanted us to they were training people on giving interviews. And so they're like, we'll bring you there, and basically you're going to be an interview candidate for all these different people at different times. And there were other people too. And they're like, and if they just ask you something, just make it up on the fly. And I was like, okay, this is great. And I was like a go-go dancer. I was, a runway model, which is something I would never obviously be. And just all these different careers that I had in these interviews for Target Corporation, it was just crazy. And they thought they were laughing, having a good time of their life. And I was just trying to help them learn how to give interviews. So it's really does come up on a every single day basis. But I was, you know, you've done so many things in the world of professional wrestling. I was once working with an interviewer and, you know, trying to teach him how to do interviews, and he just kept freezing up. And finally I was like, dude, go take improv lessons, was the advice that I gave him. And he didn't do it until like 2 years later. And then he started doing some of his best stuff. Like, it just, you learn that everything can be planned out, especially in wrestling. You can't plan everything out in wrestling.
I wish more people in the wrestling world would take that or take an acting class. I mean, just because there's so much to be taken from it. I mean, everybody busts their butt so hard to become like the best worker possible, as they should. But, you know, it amazes me sometimes when somebody does invest in working on the talking side of it a bit more. Like Cody Rhodes, as I understand it, like around the time he was doing the undashing gimmick, he'd worked with an acting coach, and his promos just became so much more interesting to watch. So it's an often forgotten part of the equation in this business at times, I think.
It really is, and you bring up a great point, because what a lot of people, especially the hardcore internet fans, which is going to be a good portion of the people who listen to this, what they don't understand is that to really make it in the world of pro wrestling, the in-ring skill part of it, there's basically a threshold you have to reach, and then the rest is kind of, you know, icing on the cake. Then it's all those other things that you need to do. It's kind of like a five-tool player in baseball who can do everything.
Especially if the goal is to get, if the goal is to get to WWE, I mean, they're just as much about the sizzle as they are the steak, if not more so. So it's, something to think about.
I think, you know, the in-ring thing is skill is maybe 40% of the total package in a place like WWE. And unfortunately, a good 20% of that is that it factor that you also can't teach. So it's, you know, it does cause some people to struggle. But you're right. Like, the acting side of things is so important. And you always hear so many success stories about people who, when they took that plunge and got some acting lessons, it makes a huge difference in their career, both in and out of WWE. And of course, Cody Rhodes is a unique perspective because he's got his dad and his brother and everybody who, you know, he lived it and came up that way. So definitely.
Yeah. And we had him on Freak Show Wrestling at one point as well, which was really cool.
I know it was on his list. I remember when he had the famous Cody list. One of the things he wanted to do was Freak Show Wrestling.
He wrestled against Funny Bone for the Freak Show Wrestling Championship. And as Trump, I did a bit with him before the match. It was just a lot of fun, but really cool guy.
Oh yeah,
I think it was a joke. Stin wanted me to ask. He'd just been on like Arrow or something like that, and I said like, hey, well you got. I heard you got caught doing Stardust in the bathroom or something like that. To kind of mess.
He loved every minute of it. Funny Bone, by the way, I have a good relationship with Funny Bone. I've actually booked him before for a wrestling show. So it's a very, very underrated performer, in my opinion, in the world of pro wrestling.
Well, I'll tell you who must think very highly of Funny Bone and what he does is Finn Balor. So, I mean, everything from the paint, the paint to the double stomp. My goodness.
Yeah, I know. And to Funny Bone's credit, he, you know, got over pretty quick and then adjusted. So that's, you know, to his credit there, because he could have, you know, he could still be that guy harping on the same thing today, but he made the changes and rolled with it, like we talked about earlier, you know, roll with the punches.
Yeah. Funny Bone's
so
legit.
Oh yeah, 100%. Before we had the tech issues that may or may not be, people may or may not hear in the final product, what brought you from all this forms of entertainment and wrestling, pro wrestling? How'd you get involved with Sin Bodhi and Freak Show Wrestling?
Well, as I was mentioning before, and we'll see if I can get through the story this time, I was managing somebody in the Los Angeles area, and he invited me to a Freak Show. He was booked on it. And I showed up, and I was like, this is something I have to be a part of, absolutely. And actually that night, there was like sort of an alien invasion gimmick going on, and Sin, after I'd been introduced to him, he threw a a whole alien hat and robe, or, you know, mask and robe on me. And I didn't really do too much. I was more of a breathing prop at the time, but, you know, hey, you got to start somewhere, no matter what, like, you know, if it's a new company and all that. And, it was, I think the same night, Jake Roberts, I think, was on that show. Kevin Sullivan, Rikishi was there because it was his venue. So it was a pretty cool experience. And afterwards I shot Sin an email sort of introducing him to who I was. And I was like, hey, of all the wrestling companies that are out here right now, I think this is the one I'd probably contribute to the best because of the comedy aspect of it. So I sent him a reel that had some of my wrestling on it, my stand-up comedy, my impressions. And to his credit, he sat through the whole thing. I think the darn thing was like 5 or 6 minutes long when you're supposed to keep those a lot shorter. And he just kind of on the spot, he was asking me like, you know, can you do this voice? Can you do this voice? And I, you know, did them. And it's been a happy little second marriage ever since. I don't know. Something like that.
That's awesome. And obviously you've got John Trump as you are, you know, commentator for Freak Show Wrestling. So we all know who that's a parody of. But how did you come up with the idea and infuse it into, you know, the world of pro wrestling?
Well, this would have been 2015, I believe. It was the current season of South Park had just come on. I was seeing how they were tackling things topically, and I was like, you know, I want to do that more too, and maybe in the wrestling world I could you know, certainly in my stand-up, I was covering, you know, stuff that was current and topical, but I just thought, you know, the satirization, I came to him with two ideas. I'd already been doing like a couple of minor gimmicks for him, like confused cockroach and stuff like that. But I said, hey, I want to pitch two ideas because I think one of these, maybe both could be really funny. And he said, okay, what are they? I said, well, one was Kim Davis, who was the librarian looking lady who wouldn't marry the gay people out in whatever state that was in. I just thought the idea of putting on drag and being like this intolerant lady, you know, could have been right. Funny as from a wrestling standpoint. That was the first one. And then I said, well, and then obviously with him saying he wants to be president, I think I could do a pretty good Donald Trump and that could be fun to wrestle for you as that or do commentary shtick. And he's like, let's try Trump. I don't know how much mileage I could have got out of the Kim Davis thing, but clearly the Trump thing has, you know, lasted me a little bit and kept me working with Freak Show Wrestling. So.
Oh yeah. Which is amazing that, you know, anything in just wrestling, just like any other form of entertainment, when you can get something longstanding and it sticks, that's the thing, and you want to stick with it. So for one of the goals, obviously, is we want to bring more eyeballs to, you know, the Freak Show and Freak Slam product. So for someone who's hearing this for the first time and they're starting to go check out Freak Show Wrestling and maybe not quite know what to expect, you know, if someone strolls in on June 23rd for the very first time, what can they expect to see out of this?
Holy hell. My God, yeah. They can expect – the Black Annie, Nurse Ratched, Serial Man, Gaydolf Hitler. I mean, just the character, Creepy Karen, Sin Bodhi, obviously. It's just nuts. It's such a, you know, on a feast to the senses, I would say, with just how much. And then, you know, because of the circus element of Sin Bodhi and the Kazarni gimmick, you know, we have sort of sideshow acts sometimes between the matches. Like we have one of my favorites was we have a guy dressed as Sting in the Crow gimmick, and he does these comedy songs, and we call him Sing as opposed to Sting. Sometimes it's like a burlesque act between the matches, I should say, or magic. It's just nuts. It's so earmarked for Las Vegas that it's perfect that it is where it is near the Fremont Experience.
Right.
So.
And it's so wrestling too, because wrestling really has become a variety show, and that's exactly what this is.
Oh, very much so. I mean, I would put like, you know, I remember one of the matches, I can't remember if I was commentating or refereeing as Trump for it, but like I would put, Funny Bone against Black Annie up there on any like, hey, you should watch this match list. And, you know, we have a really good, I think, balance between having matches that are based more on the comedy spots, but we also have some pretty, you know, darn good, like, you know, traditional work ratey things you would, you know what I'm getting at. I'm a little bit tongue twisted
yes.
here, but we have a good mix of everything, a little something for everybody, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they always joke about wrestling is that funny don't make money. But you definitely have the comedy. You have the in-ring stuff. You know, you talked about it. You had Cody Rhodes versus, you know, Funny Bone. And people listening
mm-hmm.
are going to know who Cody Rhodes is and may not know who Funny Bone is. But they need to understand when that bell rang, those guys were equals in the ring. And Funny Bone, you know, he trains people. He knows his stuff. I mean, and especially if you're a fan of professional wrestling in or around Las Vegas, you know the name Funny Bone, or else you're not really a fan of professional wrestling in and around
right.
Las Vegas, because that's, you know, he's a name. He's been doing this for years, been through many gimmick changes and everything on his own. The guy is a, you know, a true professional wrestler, a true pro's pro, as they say. And I would imagine, you know, you've learned things from him as well. And it's just part of the nature of the beast.
Definitely. I've learned that I don't want to take his chops. and I've also learned that I don't think I want to be booked on a Freak Show Wrestling show if it's my birthday, because he'll
That's
usually
true.
Double stomp. He'll jump off the top rope and jump through a cake and double stomp somebody's chest in. I'm not. I don't think I need to have that happen just anytime.
Well, you're That's where you're sick and contagious and cannot be there.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I'd love to be on your show, Stan. they say it's contagious. God, I'm sorry.
Then you go to the next one.
Have Adolf Hitler. Have Adolf Hitler be Trump tonight. I can't make it. I'm sorry. It's for your own good.
What's crazy is that, and I know it happened with the show with AJ Kirsch as well. Someone is Googling Adolf Hitler right now and is going to be in for a real surprise when they see those shoulder pads. So, it's,
The last show that we had, which was April of 2017, I believe, I got to wrestle Adolf Hitler as Trump, and that was just, you know, Hitler versus Trump, basically, and that was one of the funnest matches I've ever had in my life.
I can only imagine. I could definitely only imagine that. Well, as a reminder to everybody, Freak Slam does present its unique product live from Sin City, of course, at the Fremont Country Club, 21 and over, with a $20 cover, as Hood Slam is known to say. Don't bring your freaking kids, as it says on the Facebook. We all know it actually means something else.
We need to build a wall. When they're bringing their kids, they're not bringing their best. They're bringing crime. They're bringing crybabies. And some, I assume, are good toddlers. That I will tell you.
I tell you, I almost, when you started the interview, I almost thought of doing that bit where you just called on Fox News, just ranting and raving, like, so, John, tell us about how your career started. And, you know, they're saying it's a witch hunt. A lot of people are talking about collusion. There's no collusion. It's a witch hunt. And it's a demagogue. And just going on for, like, 30 minutes doing that. To the point where you're finally like, okay, well, thanks for having me on the show. Goodbye.
That's right. Go to Freak Slam. You get more of this. And the good thing is, you know, you doing the commentary, if for those that aren't going to be available in Las Vegas on June 23rd, you can go to the Hood Slam channel on Twitch and watch the stream live from Sin City, and you could definitely have a good sampling of exactly what John Allen can do. And so we definitely hope that people have an opportunity to enjoy that. There's all sorts of places, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, where you can follow Freak Show Wrestling, Hood Slam, and of course now Freak Slam. John, they also
don't be too surprised if Trump meanders his butt into the ring. Sometimes he likes to think he's tougher than he is, so that could also be. I don't want to give away anything, but it's a possibility.
Which, you know, you talked about sometimes Donald Trump thinks he's tougher than he is. Another place where wrestling imitates real life, because that's just another, except you don't do it from behind a keyboard. You actually do it in the ring. So Donald might be a step above Donald in the eyes of many, probably many, many, to be honest with you. So where can people find you? If people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
I'm on all the social medias. That Instagram is at the John Allen. The problem is they're all different, and I hate that, but it's because I was the old man in the room and said, like, this one's not going to last. So then by the time I finally acquiesced and got on them, I had to get, like, the one that I would normally want is taken. What people can do is they can go to my comedy website at www.johnallencomedy.com, and it's got links to all of them there. Twitter, it's at King John Allen. Instagram, the John Allen, and Facebook, it's facebook.com/JohnAllenVO, JohnAllenVO.
There you go. Definitely check out John Allen. It's funny, I had to make the plunge recently and just finally changed all of them to be Chairshot Greg since we started the Chairshot website and everything. So it does make
I
it
should
a little
do
bit
that
easier.
Too. I should also change mine to Chairshot
Greg. You can't,
because
Chairshot Greg is taken. Yeah.
Oh, well, Chairshot Greg 2. That's what I'll
There you go. You
I'll
could
do.
Be Chairshot John. I would be fine with that. You could definitely do that. We'll support you at the Chairshot. We love our friends. So, John, I really appreciate you doing this. What is the next gig, if one's scheduled, and hopefully it is, where people can see you maybe outside the world of pro wrestling?
Oh, outside? Well, let's see. I'm back at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank on June 27th. Bonehenge is at CIA June 15th. Ricotta Flair will be back in action on the 21st of June. That is wrestling, though. And then obviously Freak Slam June 23rd at the Fremont Country Club in Las Vegas, Nevada. So, you know, for all the other shows, just follow me on social media. I'm not shy about, you know, where I'll be.
Yeah, well, can be. And of course, if you get confused about any of the addresses, just go to John Allen Comedy, J-O-N-A-L-L-E-N, comedy.com. Got all the links right there for you. Very easy to find. And of course, Freak Slam Wrestling, June 23rd, Fremont Country Club. Go to freakshowwrestling.com, get all the details, come out, support the product, see wrestling like you may have never seen it before, but you'll see a very, very entertaining product. So, John, we appreciate your time joining us here. We know that you're a busy man. We hope you get even busier and just continued success in the future.
Did you know that I had the most downloads of any guest on Chairshot Radio? The best, the most any. No one's ever seen ratings like this on a podcast. That I will tell you. Believe me.
What happened to the cartoons from my generation, you guys? What happened to Thundercats, huh? What happened to Transformers, aside from Michael Bay? What happened? I got him. I remember on G.I. Joe? G.I. Joe, give it up for G.I. Joe. You remember at the end, though, they like try to teach you stuff? I don't even got to do the joke and two people laugh because they know how retarded that was. Because you get to the end of G.I. Joe, all these people trying to kill each other, and you got like these two little retarded kids going like, "Hey, Jimmy, look, a lawnmower. Cool, let's stick our faces into it."
A tin hut!
It's Sergeant Slaughter!
Don't stick your face into that lawnmower, kid.
And the little kid, right, he's like, "Why?"
You'll break your dad's lawnmower.
Oh, yeah, huh? Thanks, Sergeant Slaughter. Now we know.
And no one's half the battle. And I got a room at the Radisson if you want. No.
Well, they're always right there. Have you noticed that, man? They're like waiting. Like, oh, those kids are going to do something stupid sooner or later. And you got like the one kid, "Hey, I scraped my knee."
"Hey, kid, how's it going? You ready for a life lesson? I'm barbecue."
She had Joe named Barbecue. "Watch out, Cobra Commander, we're sending the chef." Every time I do the G.I. Joe bit, there's another comic, Matt Francis, who loves like when I do racist Cobra Commander.
"Destro, get rid of all the Mexicans."
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.